time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I think Klievkov is hiring Michael Yormark, and he's going to send him to random campuses around just to cause mayhem in the Big 12. Wait, what are we doing?
SI's Ross Dellinger.
Someone mentioned that there's still folks in around college sports in California that believe that UCLA is still has the chance to come back to the Pac-12, and given that 2024 schedule, maybe they should. That is just brutal.
And SI's Pat Forte.
Yes, baby Gronk was getting rizzed up by Libby Dunn.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and we have got a summer beef. We got fight. We got Memphis. We got the Big 12. They like me. They like me not. I love when conference realignment gets refuted stories. Last week, college AD, citing anonymous sources, reported a contingent of Big 12 officials led by Commissioner Brett Yormark made a recent, quote, under the radar campus visit, end quote, to Memphis in the league's ongoing, quote, due diligence efforts. This is from the Commercial Appeal. Love it. Secret visits, a contingent. I mean, this is great stuff. However, Yormark went to ESPN and said, quote, I've never met with anyone at Memphis about adding them to the Big 12, nor have I been on campus. Who is telling the truth? Now let's parse these words. I never met with anyone at Memphis. Anyone with Memphis?
On campus. On campus.
At, said, right? It says at Memphis. That's it.
Mm-hmm. No, but then later on, he says on campus, right?
Oh, on I've campus. Never... Okay. Oh, yeah. Wait. And then there's Dennis Dodson on this. What was reported didn't happen at all. I'll leave it at that. Dennis Dodd and the Big 12 commissioner for leaking are very tight. They may be the same person. I don't know. Dennis Dodd's the best, man. Love him, but he's tight with that commissioner over there.
There seems commissioner to be a leaking. Yes, a symbiotic relationship. There.
They have each other's cell. They have each other's cell. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Campus AD says they are. I don't know. Look, here's my thing. Why wouldn't you meet with Memphis? You damn talking about bringing UConn in. Fresno State, like, what? I'm standing up. Justice for Memphis. Why? The Big 12 should be over there. Yormark, get your ass to Bluff City. Hit Beale Street. Enjoy yourself. Get a little barbecue. Listen to a little blues and check out what they got at Memphis. The Big 12 would be lucky to have Memphis. I don't like this. You don't just sit there and snub Memphis like that. Pat, what's going on? Ross, who knows anything? Anyone know anything?
On this realignment stuff, I've tried my best to, we've talked about on the show a lot, like just kind of walk a fine line here, with the realignment stuff. Cause there's a lot of speculation and reports, and this is like this situation with Memphis and the Big 12 is, exactly what we've been talking about in why it's hard to sift through so much of the stuff there's, a lot of agendas and a lot of misinformation and a lot of speculation, and it always happens during realignment season, but this has like been probably the I feel like one of the crazier years of the realignment stuff. Look, this shouldn't be that big of a surprise, you know. Back in, I think it was right around mid-April, right as ACC began their spring meetings, we posted a story about a realignment and kind of mid-May in about 3 weeks ago. And in there, you know, we wrote about how Memphis was one of the Big 12 targets. Now it's kind of like down the list, but it was at least a school that the Big 12 administrators discussed in Phoenix at their meetings. So I think there's a little bit of a courtship. I don't know how serious it is. I think other schools are probably more serious with the Big 12. But it doesn't seem like that big of a surprise. But man, for whatever reason, right? Brett Yormark of the Big 12 want to get it out there that they were not there. And I don't know what to believe at this point, because the original reports are, you don't often see, right, reporters come back at on the record statements from commissioners. So it's an interesting time.
Yeah, this is a good little taffy pull here, because not only, yes, is college AD standing by the story, and Yormark's refuting the story, but then Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian, another outlet that's in Memphis, and Calkins has been there forever, tweeted, regarding the current tizzy over the Big 12 visit to Memphis, it wasn't our story, but we're not going to refute the original story because, well, Brett Yormark was here. And it's increasingly clear how badly people didn't want that to be out. So, that's two sources, two different outlets saying definitively Brett Yormark was there. And yes, if you want to try to thread a needle of, you know, trying to tell the truth here maybe and say, well, I wasn't on campus. I didn't meet with them about, you know, at Memphis. Okay. So you were at the Peabody Hotel maybe and watched the Ducks walk in and go to the fountain and had a drink there with people in Memphis and then you discussed it or what? But clearly there seems to have been some element of communication between the conference and people involved with the university. And yeah, to Dan's point, like, why wouldn't there be? You know, the Memphis thing has been, you know, that fan base has just been tied in knots. They thought they should have got into the Big 12 when Cincinnati got in.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, even when West Virginia got in, you know, Memphis has been trying like a hell to get itself out of the American Athletic Conference for years. And they've watched their former compatriots and rivals, Louisville, go to the ACC, Cincinnati now going to the Big 12. And they're like, wait a minute. There's got to be a spot for us, and so far there's not.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, does anyone know what Brett Yormark looks like? Is anyone in Memphis? Was it Yormark or was it an imposter?
Did he have ribs at Rendezvous?
Pac-12 sent a Brett Yormark imposter to screw them up.
That would be.
He does have a twin. He has a twin, yeah. An identical
he
twin.
He does have
remember.
A twin.
The twin
does.
Was just there
Michael
for the weekend.
Michael Yormark, the twin of Brett Yormark. The problem with all this, of course, is Michael Yormark works in London. It's a little far trip.
They got flights. They get on a FedEx plane, and you're there in 12 hours.
Right. Absolutely.
I think it was Michael Yormark. Was it that? Was it? Remember when Johnny Manziel was caught in Vegas, and he said his name was Billy Manziel? He had a fake mustache or something. I think Klievkov is hiring Michael Yormark, and he's going to send him to random campuses around just to cause mayhem in the Big 12. Wait, what are we doing? Why are we in South Dakota State? What are we doing?
Yeah, right.
This is
inside baseball for you here. When Brett Yormark was named the commissioner of the Big 12, Ross and I were chasing the story, and we originally thought it was Michael Yormark.
Oh, man.
And we were like,
that was bad.
We were
that
close was, to reporting yeah. it, but we're like, no, we need to make sure this yeah. is solid. And then we found out, oh, wait, there's another Yormark. It's Brett Yormark. We got it right, at least. Yeah. We got it right.
You know, as Dan probably knows, like you start, you learn news and you start just kind of pre-writing a story, start hacking, getting ready to post a story. You want to link with the news whenever you break it. And the original pre-written story was Michael Yormark is the Big 12 commissioner.
Wow.
So thankfully,
that would have been-
thankfully, we kept digging on that. And was able to that's a good example where you get a third source, a fourth source, and maybe a fifth source sometimes. So
yeah. I don't know what's going on. I do know this. To me, Memphis makes so much sense for the Big 12. Great area, good city, good recruiting turf. You plant your flag right in the middle of the SEC, or at least part of the SEC. And the thing that Memphis has is its connection with the city is real. Like, people in Memphis are Memphis fans. It's not like, nothing against these other places, but you know, you go UCF, do they really like, is everyone walking around Orlando like, hey man, UCF? No. You know, San Diego State, are they San Diego State fans? They just live in San Diego. Like, there's a connection there. Probably a greater connection than Cincinnati has with University of Cincinnati. Because there just isn't any pro sports other than the Grizzlies, and they came along. Yormark's talking about building this basketball. He thinks basketball is undervalued. Well, Memphis basketball's got history and great, great potential, obviously. it's not out of the way. I mean, they're talking, I don't know. Placing someone there is always risky in reporting because it's easy to refute whether you actually were somewhere.
Yeah.
So you always want to be more generally correct than specifically wrong. And I don't know, maybe Brett Yormark has never been to Memphis or been at campus or this or that, but good dispute. If not, get there, Brett, or send Michael or send the commissioner of leaking, tell him to meet Dennis Dodd at the Peabody. I don't care. Get to Memphis. Come on, Tigers.
Memphis does have all those things. Memphis has a real actual identity as a program within that city and within that TV market, as opposed to some of the others. I get, you know, SMU from the standpoint of, hey, we like Texas. The more Texas we got, the better. And especially if the Pac-12 wants SMU, maybe we should take SMU first. But in terms of a real fan base, in a legitimate city, and as you noted, a place where that's a good recruiting area. Memphis does have some things to sell. The fascinating thing, I would have loved to have seen George Kliakoff when all this came up, because he's had somebody within the Big 12 leak time after time after time how badly their media rights negotiations are going. And now here's somebody, you know, putting out some information that suddenly thrusts the Big 12 into a difficult spot, an uncomfortable spot, and something they're trying to refute and tamp down. And I do wonder if that, you know, if it was just something where, and this is speculation, let's say that out front, but if Yormark has told, you know, UConn, Gonzaga, whoever, hey, you are our choice. You are who we want. And now all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, wait, he's going to see Memphis too? How many people is he telling this to?
Yeah.
So he could put him in a difficult spot, but it is fascinating.
I like, is it speculation or reckless speculation? I like reckless Both. Speculation. Can you ramp that up a little bit? That was just speculation.
Yes.
I want reckless speculation, Pat.
Speculation.
No, right. I think that's probably it, you know, and it's like they're passing little notes to like the, you know, the girls. Do you like me? Check yes, no, maybe. I don't know what's going on with these guys.
Trying to get a date to the eighth grade dance. You better ask several of them.
Seems like it's getting ugly when you have to refute your meeting with Memphis. oh, boy.
All right. Realignment.
Realignment. It's going. It's going on. We'll see what happens.
Provides content.
The Internal Revenue Service has decided that seems obvious to me that nonprofit donating your money to a nonprofit NIL collective so that kids get paid to go to college will not work as a tax deduction. They are not tax exempt. Obviously, these are nonprofits, but hardly charities. I would. And the 501c3 thing is absolutely broken. I did all this on the bowl games, which were they should all lose their tax exempt. Almost all of them. It's like, well, we paid our, you know, I run a bowl game. It's a charity. I got 800 grand and we bought $25,000 in chicken soup for the local food bank. Right. That's like that's the charity. Mm-hmm. But Ross, what do you know about the IRS and this? And are there going to be some like angry, like Tennessee boosters who are just wrote Nico in their in their tax form? Suggesting anything. I just picked that word out of nowhere. And now like, wait, I gotta pay for this?
For months, if not more than a year, probably, maybe a year and a half. So many people in the NIL space have cautioned the 501c status and of nonprofit collectives. While the IRS has been granting the 501c status, I think many people, experts in the space, lawyers and even administrators and even some collective folks thought eventually the IRS was going to investigate, realize what was happening and put a stop to it. And we finally got it, you know, almost 2 years into NIL. We got the memo Friday from the office associate chief counsel of the IRS basically saying, hey, deductions or donations to a NIL collect nonprofit NIL collective are not taxed exempt. And you cannot, they are not deductible. So this obviously caused a stir within the NIL collective space. And it's kind of been a mixed bag. For instance, I got a call over the weekend from one SEC collective who basically shrugged and said, "Yeah, we'll be fine. You know, we have receipts. We're following procedure. We have comments from charities. We have statements from, you know, from charities about what we do for them. Blah blah blah." Then I got another call from a SEC collective, a different one, a different school, completely freaking out, right? In saying that their general counsel is, you know, concerned. And then there are some in the middle that are just waiting for attorneys to kind of read over this and see exactly what it means and get more expert opinion. So it should be interesting to see what happens. I think at best, many of these nonprofit collectives would just stop offering tax deductions, exemptions. At worst, as one athletic director said to me, he believes that the IRS could come after previous donations, tax them, and penalize them with penalty charges as well.
I think that's about right. I see no victims in this story.
No.
You're trying to run a game around the IRS. Sorry, pay your taxes, right, man. If you got the money to donate to the collective, you can pay your taxes.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. And that, like, again, I never understood trying to go down that road to begin with. It seemed fairly obviously dishonest. And so if the IRS does take an interest in it, eventually it's going to cause a problem. And lo and behold, they've taken an interest in it. And that's the last thing anybody ever wants to hear. Oh, the IRS is interested in your books and your how you've taxed or not taxed yourself and what you're doing with your money. So, I was shocked that people ever tried to go that route. But that seems to be, you know, the NIL / collective space was just a massive vacuum that was filled with a lot of, hey, quick, bright ideas, and some of them haven't turned out to be that bright.
All right, who's excited about Baby Gronk?
I didn't know about it until you told me about it pre-show, so.
What? The world is Baby Gronk's world, according to his dad.
Yeah.
Hey, according to his dad, he can talk to anybody on Earth. Everybody likes Baby Gronk.
Yeah, so Baby Gronk was getting rizzed up by Livy Dunn.
Livy Dunn, he said he knows Donald Trump's son's wife. Baby Gronk is Jake San Miguel, I guess. Or is that the dad? No, that's the dad.
No, the dad is a different San Miguel.
Dad is right. Jake.
Oh, the dad. Right, Jake.
Okay, whatever. There's dad.
The son is just Baby Gronk. That's all.
Baby Gronk. We're not talking. You don't need a name. You got brilliant nickname. Kind of looks like Gronk. Lord knows there's a chance there's a lot of Baby Gronks out there. There may not be any. I don't know, but who the hell knows what Gronk's been doing? Anyway, this kid looks like Gronk. He's 10 years old, and he's big for his size. He puts on fake tattoos. He plays football. He's for a 10-year-old, I guess he's a pretty good football player for 10. Whatever that is. He has amassed 315,000 social media followers. And basically his dad is just an opportunistic marketer, right? So he finds a way to get a video with Livy Dunn, the LSU gymnast that's got, you know, 2 billion followers or something. He's gotten pictures with Shaq and Wahlberg. And we've met these guys. Like, they're just relentless at the picture, or they're just like, it's like social media is just such a like fake world, right? You get that one snapshot and it looks like you're friends with Shaq, right? Shaq probably takes 200 photos a day.
Yeah.
Like Shaq can't go anywhere without someone posing for Shaq, and he just does a smile, but it's how you promote it. So the kids are not a bad little player. They cut up some tape, whatever, but he's 10. Okay. He's 10. But so Ari Wasserman of The Athletic, who does their recruiting coverage, part of their recruiting team, he does this Q&A with Jake San Miguel. He did that. And it's all about, like, how the hell did you even do this? It's not even really like this in-depth profile of it. It's just sort of like, it was just an interesting, simple Q&A. And he doesn't take judgment on the dad. He's just like, how are you pulling this off? And it's like, he signs up for the Alabama camp and everybody gets a picture with Nick Saban. If you sign up for like their youth camp, that's part of the camp. But then the way they make it look in the picture, it's like he had a recruiting visit to Alabama.
At 10,
which he did not.
Super Bowl.
No, shockingly.
He says, yeah. I went to camp with Nick Saban. Every camper gets a picture with the coach at camp, right? But not every picture will go viral. Only baby Gronks will go because we have the following. So it looks like Nick Saban's recruiting baby Gronk, but he's not. He's just doing that Nick Saban fake smile and standing there going, how much? I hope better be getting paid for this because I'm taking 1,000. They're running these kids through LSU. Kentucky goes, you know, they make it look like he's this recruit. Everyone's recruiting a 10-year-old. No one's recruiting a 10-year-old. Nobody. Okay. It's maybe if Gronk was his dad, they'd be like, hey, we're gonna keep an eye on that guy, but he's not. So here we are. So it's this fake world where he's created. So Ari Wasserman does this simple like Q&A. It was fine. But the New York Times, which owns The Athletic, sends out on their social media the story. And make it seem like it's a serious, like there's a 10-year-old overwhelmed. The New York Times has 55 million Twitter followers. Okay. So all of a sudden, it worked, right? Baby Gronk is now when you get the New York Times crowd, it's like think pieces. Like, well, this doesn't seem healthy, you know? And everyone's weighing in on, wait a minute, you know, why is the New York Times promoting this? And so it's funny. And I mean, there's some of these quotes in here this is my favorite quote, and I'll let you guys say whatever you want about it. He asked the dad, is he a recruitable athlete? He goes, well, you never know, dude. My kids are anyone else's kids. They could become drug addicts, fall for a woman, get in trouble, health problems could pop up. You never know where life will go. Like, hey, there's some optimism on my 10-year-old. I've had 2 10-year-olds in my life. Not once that I was like, hey, man, might get hooked on the fentanyl. This whole thing is absurd. So, Pat or Ross, what do you think? Baby Gronk, real or fake?
looks pretty fakeish to me. But I'm just getting to know this character in this story as we're talking. Doing a little Googling, and these headlines are hysterical. Baby Gronk story stirs reaction across sports world. Cardinals legend J.J. Watt reacts to Baby Gronk. Who is Baby Gronk, and how did he become so popular on social media? These stories are hilarious.
We're talking about him.
Yeah, there you go. I think I'm the only sports media person that Baby Gronk's dad hasn't DM'd, and quite frankly, I'm insulted, says Brett Coleman, whoever that is. Look at there. You know what? Now that I'm looking at this, guys, I think I might have got a Baby Gronk dad DM like months ago. Guess I should have followed through on it.
Probably.
No, you shouldn't. You should run the other way.
Definitely get DMs from players, and I feel bad, but you never know. You don't know who you're dealing with either. Yeah. My son's the best 10-year-old, and I mean, come on.
yeah, this has been quite an education. I saw a discussion that said, Livy Dunn rizzed up Baby Gronk. And I'm what is this combination of words? What does this even mean?
First off,
well, rizzed up apparently just means like acknowledged or maybe flirted with or whatever.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't want to know.
Let me put it that
anyway,
way.
Anyway. I'm not here to tell anybody how to parent their kid, but lock him up, man. Get that dad in a room and give him a reality check about what exactly he's doing here to his
making money. Says he's made $100,000.
That's what he says. Oh, we have any proof of that?
I would never. You know? I mean, selling out your kid And it's like, well, it's fun. He's enjoying it. Of course he is.
Yeah.
But.
Right.
You know.
And eventually. Yeah. I like how many times have we seen a kid who's big for their age at 12, and then all of a sudden, guess what? At 14, they're average size, and you're just who you are. I mean, this has much potential to end up very badly. I hope it doesn't. I hope they just have some fun with it, and eventually this all goes away. But good God, what are you doing with your 10-year-old, man? Stop it.
There's like one good thing can happen out of this, and of 1 million bad things. This has one, like, it works, maybe two. Like, he actually is a great player, but he would have been a great player anyway. Or they make some money, it's funny, gets on
you
with
it. Spend
his
the
life.
Summer making him $100,000, you put it in the bank, and then he goes
like
on with
12.
His
you're yeah, everyone grew, and they're not. This is why I always I talk about LeBron. Like, LeBron, 10 years old, was at a park, and a football coach came by to try to get kids to try out for the local, like, whatever, Pop Warner or whatever the team was. And he found LeBron. And he's like, holy cow. He's like, and I talked to the guy once, and he's like, he said, at worst, I thought he'd play football at Ohio State. Like he was an insane athlete, and the size, the whole thing. And he's like, that was the floor. And from that time on, LeBron didn't have social media. He wasn't national until about 15, but he was pretty national by like 14. And he did not have a dad, and he did not have great people around him. He didn't have all this stuff, and he somehow made it without ever really he never got in any trouble. Right. And has succeeded in every single facet. So it's like, people sometimes are like, well, he's flops. He's kind of annoying. I'm like, yeah, but like, he was the child star that never fell off the thing.
Tiger.
When you got the dad, Tiger, right? Well, Tiger's wobbled a few times.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Arrested and injured. But Tiger's a little like, but Tiger had the dad.
He had the dad. He did. He had the dad.
LeBron was like thrown to the wolves, man. Yeah. He was just like, you got nothing. And here it is. Yeah, but it can happen. And it does happen and all that, but it's so rare. But you have to be that good, too.
Yeah.
And the one thing they could never, because everyone will come after Baby Gronk's going to play football in the fall at 10. And the other 10-year-olds are going to try to kill him. I mean, I played football.
Target on the
10.
Back.
You knew. Yeah, you knew who the other guy was. Like, I'm going to bust Baby Gronk up and put my Instagram. That's a lot of pressure you just put on this kid. And it's going to be Baby Gronk gets torched, and people are going to treat him like an adult.
Yep.
Because you've been this is wild, but it's funny. Good luck to Baby Gronk. Dad, slow the roll, bro. But hey, it's raising kids is hard. I ain't got all the answers either, but yikes.
Yeah. DM me back when he's 16, if he's actually still interested in football and good at football, because a lot of things change between 10 and 16. So,
yeah.
Good luck.
Great nickname, though.
It is that.
And the kid's he's got some panache, man, like the way he poses. Kid's terrific. I want to mention this story in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Alan Judd, Dylan Jackson, Jennifer Peoples, and Charles Minshew all worked on it. They have done great work at the AJC, much to the anger of Georgia Bulldog fans. Out of control, reckless culture off the field marks UGA football team. We have discussed this, but the speeding, the drag racing, death of a staffer, death of a player, injury to a staffer, injury to a player, multiple arrests, all this different stuff, and virtual silence out of Kirby Smart. And, they talk about never details what the punishment is. Almost no one ever gets suspended. There's a bunch of other bar fights and all the other things that illegal weapons that kind of happen too. Kirby, very kind of standoffish, the players know what the punishment is. Whatever he's doing isn't working or hasn't worked yet because this continues, I've said this is a huge problem because it's not okay. You shouldn't, no player, no one should be able to like beat someone up at a bar fight, right? That's against the law. But if you're like out at 2 a.m. and you decide to fight the Georgia football team, there's a little bit of it's on you, right?
Yeah.
If you're driving home and the Georgia football team goes 104 miles an hour by your car and almost kills you, it ain't your fault.
Right.
So this is very much, he's trying to say everything's private. This is public because it's on the city streets. And, you know, I get it. He's got all the power. Georgia doesn't care. President doesn't care. Fans don't care, but I don't know how many, what has to happen for anyone to care. We've had deaths. I mean, they're going to kill somebody else. So, Pat, did you read the story?
Yeah. And I said, actually, at the time of the fatal accident, when the AJC started looking into this, you do not want Alan Judd looking into your business. One of the reporters on this, I worked with him at the Courier Journal, exceptional, tenacious, investigative reporter. And he's front and center on this story. And yeah, this paints a really bad picture, and it does just completely smack of, we really only care about winning, and whatever we do to the players when something goes wrong is none of your business, and we're not going to tell you, and whatever we do isn't going to be that significant. Because the key point there, like, if you want to say discipline's internal, fine, it better work. It's not working at Georgia. And so if the discipline isn't working, then I think it becomes everybody else's business to a degree too. As you said, they become public menaces to people out there the way that they are driving and or comporting themselves. And so there has to be more accountability, more transparency. What are you doing to the players? Why isn't it working? What's going on? Answer some questions. And if given the way things have gone, change your tactics. Try something a little bit more significant, a little bit more drastic, and get your players' attention.
Yeah. It was shocking, reading some of that. I'd heard that was talking to Chip Towers at SEC, the beat writer for AJC, longtime Georgia beat writer. I was talking to him at SEC meetings in Destin. He told me that there's going to be more things coming up, specifically like, I guess, old, you know, citations and traffic stuff and all that was in there. And it's pretty disturbing. You know, football teams seem to, you know, when there's some kind of, when one or two players dabble in something, you know, it seems to spread throughout a team, right? And this seems to be the issue at Georgia, right? Like, at some point, players began drag racing or something like that, and it just took off as this thing on the team. And man, Kirby Smart's got to get his hands around it.
We're going to get the Georgia Bulldog doc in like 5 years, 10 years.
Right.
They won like no one on the field. So speaking of docs, we're getting another one on Bishop Sycamore High School, the fake high school.
Yeah.
BS High, it's called. Great name.
that's well titled.
I'm reading this story. My favorite part is they're still pretending it's real in the story. Bishop Sycamore, and then it puts in parentheses OH, like Ohio, like they played IMG Academy, parentheses F. There was no high school. Why Ohio? Just because they said they were from Ohio? Bishop Sycamore. Great slot receiver for Auburn back in the day. I think Texas Tech. I don't know where I used to have them. Anyway, will you watch the Bishop Sycamore game? You know, they had a fake high school. They convinced ESPN they were real. They played IMG, and they lost 58-0. Their players couldn't actually. They had, like, Baby Gronk out there or something. I don't know what they had. They could have used Baby Gronk.
They could have. He might have started for him.
I mean, they played at the Hall of Fame Stadium in, you know, Canton, Ohio. I mean, one of the all-time great cons. Like, let's just put together a fake high school.
Yeah, they got the game on ESPN, right?
Yeah, they got paid, too. You get paid.
Yeah, they got paid.
And then they had a fake school, and they got destroyed, and I don't know where they got these guys. I'm looking forward to this thing. This is going to be a riot. This better be told in a humorous way and not, like, scolding. Because this is just like two guys got drunk one night and said, hey, what if we make a fake high school? Round up some dudes around here. Go play IMG on ESPN. No one will fall for that. We'll see. Send an email in. Next thing you know, you're on Fruit and ESPN.
Odds are 1-9 that it is scolding and not
humorous. They got better exposure than the Pac-12's deal. Bishop Sycamore. Hire those guys.
Bishop Sycamore on Pump 6. Yeah, station TV.
I mean, they got the main ESPN. Way to go, Bishop Sycamore. Do they sell gear? I need gear. I need Bishop Sycamore.
Missing an opportunity gear. if they're not, huh?
I think so. Somebody should be selling it. You can't claim the rights to Bishop Sycamore. It doesn't exist. Can you? I don't know. You probably can. Mm-hmm. Pay, trademark it. I'm sure these guys don't want to make a dollar off of something that's, you know, a little untoward. late last week, Big Ten released future schedules.
Oh, boy.
Michigan will play USC in the L.A. Coliseum the first year. UCLA will visit Ann Arbor. Ohio State will visit UCLA. Those are kind of some of them. There is divisionless rotations. Penn State has been deemed to have no rival, which is what we've all known.
Their
rival is Ohio State. They used to try to pump up that. Remember, was that the land grant, right? Grant trophy with Michigan State never took.
No, yeah, it was Michigan State. Penn State had that trophy.
Now they've admitted that didn't work.
No.
So Penn State has no protected rival. Lots of travel. I think I saw like Iowa won't play like Illinois, Purdue, and I don't know somebody, but they got to go to like. It's a new day in the Big Ten. New day in the Big Ten. Pat, thoughts?
Yeah. You know, I wrote a column about it last week. The initial look is like, oh, cool, man. You know, Michigan coming to the Coliseum, or you know, I can't remember now whether UCLA's at the Big House, whatever the case.
USC,
anyway,
Michigan will play the Coliseum.
Yeah,
that'll be a huge game.
And right. Know. Yeah, I mean, that's cool. That's the kind of thing you'd maybe see in the Rose Bowl on January 1st once every 5 to 10 years. Yeah, and now you're going to get to see it in home and home. So that's cool. But I could not get past, in looking at this, what they are asking USC and UCLA to do. What USC and UCLA are volunteering to do.
Yeah, yeah.
It is absolutely ridiculous in terms of a logistical standpoint, in terms of all the things that we hear administrators talk so much about: academics, mental health, student athlete welfare. You're going to get on a plane four times and you're going to go 2,000 or more miles four times a year to play road games. And the best thing of all, when they're announcing this on Big Ten Network, they interviewed Gene Smith, the athletic director at Ohio State, and there was this very self-congratulatory tone that the Big Ten had figured out a scheduling method in which no school had to go to the West Coast more than once a season. And that was they were not going to burden anybody. They were spreading out the burden, as it was called. So nobody has to go west more than once. Well, guess what? The teams on the West have to go east four times each. It's a ridiculous. I mean, USC and UCLA, for the money, have put their students, their athletes, in an incredible, incredibly demanding position. And I don't know how this is going to work, especially in the sports other than football. Football, once a week, mostly on Saturdays, but there will be Friday games. You're absolutely going to charter for those games. But are you going to charter volleyball, softball, cross country, swimming? Are you going to do those? Or what about basketball when you're playing middle of the week? UCLA plays a Wednesday game on Fox against Rutgers. You're missing school Tuesday. You're missing school Wednesday. You're probably missing school Thursday. You're taking 3 days out of the middle of the week. And go ask educators, we're going to have tutors and we can have remote learning and you can get online for your classes. Go ask educators how the remote learning went during the pandemic, if you're really getting an education.
Mm-hmm.
So two elite academic institutions have just absolutely sold their athletic programs down the river for more money. Congratulations.
Ain't here to play school.
Ain't here to play school.
How about UCLA's 2024 road football schedule? I'll go through them. At Hawaii, at LSU in Baton Rouge, at Indiana, at Iowa, at Michigan, and the furthest yet, at Rutgers. What a road schedule. I don't know what the mileage is on that. I don't know how they're going to structure that. They don't have dates of any games except maybe the first couple. I'm at a conference down in Orlando, National Athletic, NACTA, whatever it stands for. And a lot of athletic administrators here. And last night at the bar, someone mentioned that there's still folks in around college sports and in California that believe that UCLA is still has the chance to come back to the Pac-12. And given that 2024 schedule, even though I don't believe they're going to return to the Pac-12, maybe they should. That is just brutal.
When you talk to NFL teams and they like, this is the challenge for like the Seahawks or like sometimes, you know, they rotate those things. And so it's like NFC West gets AFC East this time. And you got a couple games you got to go play. And, you know, NFL teams will, you know, they're freaking out over everything, but they're like, oh man, we got to go to Baltimore from Seattle. We got to leave a day early. We got to, you know, they have all sophisticated plans. I mean, this is just reality. I'll tell you what, for UCLA and for USC, joining the Big Ten to me is like when the schools make deals. Remember when the people at Louisville were shocked that Adidas would try to influence the recruiting? They like, we're business partners with Adidas. Now, when someone gives you $115 million or whatever it is, you work for Adidas. You work for them.
Yeah.
The USC and UCLA are fine now. They work for the Big Ten. Big Ten's going, we're going to bail you out. Well, you're coming. And yeah, Gene Smith's sitting there going, hey, it's good for us. We only got to go out there once. Don't worry about it. They're going to be dog tired. Man, if you have a bad season going, trip after trip. Yeah. And yeah, it's exhausting going west to east. And yeah, you will have to leave Thursdays. I think Lane Kiffin talked about that because he was very duped because they go to Notre Dame. And because that was a huge challenge in the middle of the season, having to make that one trip to Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what you're doing here with all these ones. So
yeah, hey,
buckle up.
The average mileage for the four road games for USC is over 2,400 miles. The average for UCLA is over 2,300. And yeah, they've got to, I mean, even if they schedule it where you can not have back-to-back weeks on the road, which I think is an absolute imperative, it's still going to be, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a grind. And as you said, like, yeah, the NFL teams don't like that three time zone travel, and they don't like it for a reason. It's hard, and you got to come back the next week and get ready and play another good team. So it's a big ask.
Couple championship updates. West Virginia won a robotics title.
Ooh.
Alert listener sent us. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Almost dudes out in the woods with out in the woods with their drones like screwing around. I don't know what they're doing. In a very I feel happy about this. The US Military Academy won combat weapons national title.
Yeah,
I damn hope so.
In a stunner.
if they get beat, we got real problems.
I mean, that's like, you got to fire the coach. I mean, this is like John Wood. You better win every time.
Yes.
Maybe Navy takes you down, maybe Air Force, but you are the United States military cap. You better win combat weapons, or this country is in a lot of trouble. Demanding a congress call, Tuberville. We need a congressional investigation if the Army ever loses combat weapons. Yeesh, I don't know what.
Who else even competes in combat weapons?
I don't know. Right there, you're on the watch list.
Yeah. The Air Force, Navy, Merchant Marine Academy.
West Virginia definitely is in combat weapons. You know they are, whether they admit it or not. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I am terrified of whoever. What and where? Who hosts this? Like, do they do this in Indianapolis? They don't want this one.
No,
You don't want
Militia
that smoke.
University in the UP hosting this, you know?
Combat weapons. National champs. There's a sign at West Point. It says 2023 national champs. Mike Richard sent me this on Twitter. They won women's boxing. They won something called Team Black. I don't know what that is. They won combat weapons. They won men's and women's team handball. So way to go. West Point. Guys are awesome. Keep it up. Keep up the streak.
I still don't know what that one thing is. What's the
Team Black?
I don't. Team Black.
What? I don't. No again, idea. Like,
who are you competing against in Team Black?
Maybe nobody. Maybe that's, I mean, it's one way to win a title. Yeah. Job opening that was sent to us. University of Wisconsin-Madison is hiring a professional cheese eater.
Wow.
For the purpose being,
guys looking for a little extra work this summer. The Center for Dairy Research is looking for individuals passionate about all types of food, but especially cheese, pizza, and other dairy products. Once hired, we will train you to become part of a group of expert tasters capable of verbally describing their sensory experience on the basis of appearance, texture, taste, and aroma attributes for research and product development purposes. Panelists should expect to be tasting up to 24 cheese samples and 12 pizzas a week, along with other food products. Panelists would need to be available for 3-hour consecutive periods, up to 3 sessions per week.
3-hour consecutive periods. Cheese pizza.
Yeah, this is the one by Dave Portnoy, right? Basically, right? He just eats the cheese pizzas around and makes a gazillion bucks. The one by challenge. Ross, you up for this? Cheese, 12 pizzas a week.
Well, he's lactose intolerant.
Yeah, oh, no, I have some lactose in the fridge, lactate in the fridge. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay, you're out. Pat, yeah. What do you think?
Oh, I'm in. Yeah. Give me 12, 12 pizzas. Come on. Are you kidding me? I'll weigh 290 by after the first 3 months, but that's fine. I'm willing to go down one pizza at a time. Come on.
Here's my thing, a 3-hour session 3 times a week. That means you're eating at least 4 pizzas in 3 hours every other day. And then there's other 24 other cheese samples. I mean, that's a lot of pizza.
It is a lot of pizza.
It's not spread out over 7 days. You got to go 3.
Well, maybe you don't have to eat a whole pizza. You just eat a piece, you know?
What a job.
It's an incredible job. It really is. Like, what do you like your report that you're writing up or whatever? I mean, what is it you're writing? It's like this cheese tastes very good.
Describe the sensory experience based on appearance, texture, taste, and aroma. I mean, I think I do that every time, right? Is the pizza good? Yeah, it's good. Man, what a country. Someone's making a living on this. Yeah.
I wonder, does it say how much you get paid?
That was not in there, but
okay. You're paid in cheese. Literally, get it? Ha ha.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's so I'll tell you what, the badge, talk about Big Ten. That's some Big Ten. World Series is it set or close to at this point?
Close. We've got like 6 out of 8 and then Stanford, Texas and Tennessee Southern Miss. We're taping this Monday morning. So
yeah,
those two games will decide the 7th and 8th teams.
Okay. The big one was, Oral Roberts has made it. That's a, upset. And what it really does is we wonder, if you recall last year, the pizza place, it's a pizza place, right? Roscoe's Pizza in Omaha had the Jell-O shot challenge for various fan bases to come in. And they kept tally of the Jell-O shots. And what was it? Was it old? Who?
Wasn't it Arkansas that just absolutely destroyed everybody?
Yes, that was it. Last year's tally is Arkansas.
Ole Miss won, right?
Arkansas fans consumed. Yeah. Ole Miss got, no, they didn't do too well. Oh, yeah, Ole Miss. Ole Miss won.
They won.
They won the national
championship. Like 18,000 or something?
18,777. Wow. Arkansas, 86,72. Texas A&M did 1,300, and then it fell apart from there. Notre Dame, Auburn, pretenders. Stanford rolled in at 231. They just drink wine.
SEC just so means Ole, more jello shots.
Ole Miss, I mean, that's just running away with it. So Oral Roberts is going to sell like four of them, right?
Yeah,
like,
they are automatic last.
They're non-drinkers. Is that the, like, is,
well,
maybe,
I mean, who knows? Who knows in particular? But yeah, I would think that it's, this is your, you know, your revivalist sort of Christian university. The
sober-minded thinking, not
sober-minded thinking.
18,000 jello shots, like those maniacs from.
But you know who's going to take that down is LSU. LSU's going to outdo.
Yeah,
that
LSU 18,000. Will win. They're the odds-on favorite for sure.
Odds,
yeah,
not even a question. Yeah. The others are Florida, TCU, Wake Forest, and Virginia right now. I guess the Gators can give them a run, maybe. But
yeah,
this is the wrecking ball of LSU coming into the.
Yeah, yeah. Florida's people will see if they're up to the challenge. But right now, maybe Texas, if Texas beats.
Texas was terrible last year.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. What about, okay, so we got Tennessee. Tennessee could get after it.
Oh,
Southern Miss would get after it too, but they've got to make it. You know, I'm not sure how many fans they'll bring.
Texas only had 319 jello shots last year. They barely beat Stanford. They got doubled up by Notre Dame. I mean, come on, man.
Okay, all right. Now, that's embarrassing. That's underachieving. That's as bad as some of their football performances.
It really is. Decade. Five-star jello. They were look good on the recruiting page, but couldn't deliver.
By the way,
we will need updates from the pod listenership on this once they get to Omaha. Send us updates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we'll be all over. I follow the Roscoe's account on Twitter to keep abreast at all moments.
All Omaha liquor, beer, bar owners and vendors, I'm sure, were celebrating last night when LSU punched its ticket. I think normally 500 to 1,000 LSU fans go to Omaha even when their team doesn't go, and they're there in the stands, and you can also often see them wearing the colors and around town. But when they go, there's a likelihood that, you know, 6,000 to 8,000 LSU fans will travel to Omaha. And if they make the World Series, I'd guess it could get into the five figures of LSU fans to fill that stadium.
Yeah. I've been there in, you know, for either for baseball or for swimming, because the Olympic trials had been there in 08, 4, 16, and 21. When LSU's there, it's mayhem. When LSU isn't there, I've met fans. I still know people, keep in contact with people that show up every week, every year, just because they go to Omaha to drink for a week. So they will be the dominant fan base, I would imagine, at Roscoe's and every other bar in that very bar intensive area around the stadium. It's a great setup there. It really is. Now, it absolutely could feel like you're standing under a high volume dryer for like 5 hours at a time because it's so hot there, but it is a great atmosphere for having fun and hanging around for however many days your team's in it.
I like that they do the same place. It's just because you get traditions like this, you know, and right. You're not introduced. Yeah, it's a fun setup. So there you go. Everyone get to Omaha, quench your thirst with some jello, and do it upright.
I have one baseball-related question. I would actually would like if we need Jeff Passan, who wrote the book The Arm, our former Yahoo colleague. Stanford's pitcher Sunday night threw 156 pitches in a complete game victory.
Oof.
It was an incredible performance, but it was kind of like uncomfortable to watch a 22-year-old guy throw 156 pitches. They were saying throughout the game, like, no major league pitcher, and they're getting paid, you know, tens of millions of dollars, had thrown more than 150 since LeVon Hernandez in 2005. And this guy's out there like throwing it. I hope he has a long and successful career, but I am concerned about his arm.
That's like that's more than like Bob Gibson, like one of those Bob Gibson type, like old school guys.
They had a big lead, right, Pat? Like they had like a five or six run lead.
They were up 5 runs in the last inning and kept him in. Now he demanded to go out there. But the other part of the story is they blew a 3-run lead in the ninth. the night before. Gave up five runs, totally melted down. And so, like, hey, we ain't trusting our closer in this one. So,
Bob Gibson threw a 14-inning complete game.
Jesus.
And is this correct?
Yeah. They probably didn't even count pitches back then.
They did. And on August 12, 1970, Bob Gibson for the Cardinals threw a 14-inning complete game. They did not do pitch count. The basic pitch count estimator places them at under 200 pitches thrown.
And then he took the ball again 4 days later.
He faced 52 batters in one game, threw under 200 pitches. He had 21 consecutive starts where he made it into the ninth inning.
Good God.
They won. Like, they beat the Padres. Is that right? Padres. 5-4 that night. 14 innings.
Him and Nolan Ryan are like extraterrestrials today. You know?
Nobody likes this. Yeah. Well, we know more about this, but apparently that info. Stanford, you want to? That's why Stanford lost the book collecting title. They didn't get the arm by Jeff Passan. Could do a little bit more. Yeah. I don't know. Hey, getting an NIL deal. Tell you that. University of South Florida had a professor, Joseph Dottori. He's known as Dr. Deep. He is a oceanography professor of some sort. He went underwater and lived in this lodge for scuba divers in the Florida Keys. You go inside, but it's the same pressure as the ocean. It's not like a submarine where you're basically just walking around. He was underwater for 100 days.
What?
That's a world record. Yeah, he's underwater. University professor.
An underwater lodge. What is it?
This is Associated Press. This isn't even the Daily Mail. This is the real stuff. University professor who spent 100 days living underwater at a Florida Keys lodge for scuba divers resurfaced Friday and raised his face to the sun for the first time since March 1st. Set the new record. You sit 30 feet underwater in a Key Largo lagoon.
It was never about 30 feet.
It was never about the record. It was about extending human tolerance for the underwater world and for an isolated, confined, extreme environment. I mean, we celebrate Aaron Rodgers goes in the dark for like 2 days. This guy goes out 100 days.
I have a lot of questions.
Okay, go ahead. I got some answers, maybe.
Well, like what? He didn't have scuba diving equipment on the whole time, did he?
No. I think it's just the pressure is the same as... Okay. Hmm. Unlike a submarine, which uses technology to keep the inside pressure about the same at the surface, the lodge's interior is set to match the higher pressure found underwater. So he's walking around this thing, but the pressure is intense and he gets no sun. I mean, obviously, these guys go in these nuclear submarines. They're gone for like 6 months, right? Those guys are the real heroes here. But this dude's just down there 30 under for 100 days. So he's just isolated. Now, they did have some kind of Wi-Fi. Somehow they got Wi-Fi. Man, I can't get Wi-Fi to work like in all the rooms of my house. It has a hella Wi-Fi. USF has got hella Wi-Fi. And so he taught a class. Almost 5,000 different students. I don't know what they're teaching, but he was underwater. So he has no idea that, like, what happened in March Madness. Like, he has no idea.
Missed it completely.
Yeah. Yeah. He still thinks Purdue's good. They have Final Four condemned. No, what? I mean, would you, Pat 40, would you go underwater for 100 days?
I like water and hell no. I was trying to think like how many days it would take for me to lose my mind and start going crazy. And it wouldn't be many. I think after about 3, I'd be getting me out of there. I just, no. That's too much confinement. Too little sunshine, too little interaction with mankind. No.
Miserable. Does he have booze down there?
I don't think there's rules. I mean, you can bring whatever you want, right?
Highball. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, if you could have that, if you could have yourself, you know, a 100-day supply of beer and wine and liquor. All right. I'm starting to warm up to it.
I don't. So it's called Jules Underwater Lagoon. We offer scuba professionals to complete their instruction when weather is not favorable. You can overnight. I'm on their website right now. Over, let's see how much it costs to stay there. Do you get Marriott points for this?
I'm Jules looking at
guests
the,
will check yeah. in at the front office and meet your mission director. After a quick bit of paperwork and giving us your pizza order.
What? You'll have
a top side. The pizza would be wet, wouldn't it?
There is a
Domino's
little window.
Domino's delivers to this place? What is going on?
There is a window.
I'll Since we have Wi-Fi, we are happy to take down your cell phone or tablet to the lodge. It's fun to Zoom or share your experience. So maybe you did watch March Madness.
Yeah.
Stock with the lodge is stocked with water, soda, and iced tea. Snacks are down there, too. Check-in is 10:30. Check-out is 9 a.m. So you get your pizza delivery dinner will be delivered between 4:30 and 5. A single occupancy room is $1,125.
Holy moly.
Okay.
I mean, there's some creepy pictures, too. There's, like, a couple. Like, I don't want to know. I guess. I mean, there's also a 12.5% sales tax. Job.
It's combining the Wisconsin pizza eating job with undersea exploration.
Mm-hmm. There's the Aquanaut package. That seems to be, and they get lunch also.
Mm.
Yeah, they show people. Keys. They're eating pizza. This is weird. This
Mike Leach would have done this.
What are we
Mike Leach would have done this.
Yeah, for sure.
How did he not know about this? He's always down there.
Yeah, right.
With some kind of liquor, though, it needs to be supplied probably for him. Vodka or bourbon, something needs to be down there.
If you have, so Ross, you could go. You can ask for something other than pizza if you have special dietary needs.
Mm.
Okay. No mention of alcohol.
Mm.
The ultimate swim up bar. I don't know. Got again, ways to make a living. Who knew? Well, all right. That's got. Let me see. I got anything else? I hope not.
I don't think so.
No, hope not. People tweet me better stories than this, please. At this point,
we had a black bear swimming ashore in.
Yeah, we did have that.
Yeah, that's true. I saw that. What was the story behind that?
They don't know. Oh, here we go. I got one last one. Who sent me this? Kinsayer sent me this one. A guy, you've heard of the Big Texan Steak Ranch. I think it's in like the Big Tech. It's like a 72-ounce steak.
Mm.
I thought it was in Amarillo, but let me check. Yeah, Big Texan. It's a 72-ounce steak. It's kind of famous. It's been on the Food Network and stuff. Yeah, Amarillo. The Big Texan is this restaurant, and they have a 72-ounce steak that you can you get free if you can eat the whole thing or something. But a guy came in second all time in the record recently, ate a 72-ounce steak in 6 minutes and 28 seconds.
6 minutes?
Oh, my God.
What?
There is video of this. He is freaking inhaling it.
Oh.
He's got to eat the potato, too. They put a potato in.
Oh.
Can he sue later for colon damage?
Yeah.
I mean,
the cook is out there. He can't believe it. He's shaking his head.
Fat and gristle, too?
Oh, you got to eat the whole thing. Let me see. 72-ounce. This podcast is so bad. The entire meal must be completed in an hour. If any of the meal is not consumed, swallowed, you lose. So this is how you get the free 72-ounce steak. You can cut into the steak and take one bite right as the, like, at the clock and all that. So you keep going. I don't know what the record is, but
I can't imagine eating 72 ounces of steak in 6 minutes.
Not just that. You have to eat a shrimp cocktail, a baked potato, a salad with roll and butter.
No.
Only 91,000 people have tried. Only 10,000 made it. 11% success rate.
I mean, I like all those things, perhaps just not in 72-ounce quantities.
Mm.
Still don't. Yeah. 6 minutes. Insane. So anyway, Amarillo, man. If you're in Amarillo, go give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let us
I
know.
Guess. I guess. Arrive hungry. All right. That's pods over. We were doing good. I mean, I thought the beginning was pretty good.
Yeah, we tailed off. We were on task for a while. we beard.
Yeah. All right. We'll aspire to do better. Thanks for listening all the way through. Amazingly, our traffic keeps going up. I don't.
Somehow, some way.
Like month over month, I just keep going like, wow, really? Okay. When are they going to stop listening? We'll be back later this week. Something will happen. Don't worry about that. We will talk to you later.